What is up, bros? I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Caleb.
And we're a couple of bros on a mission to give you guys the most detailed movie reviews out there with as little bias as possible. Welcome to the All Bros. This week on the podcast, since we're kind of still getting, you know, back into the swing of things, no weekly watches, so we'll just be straight up getting into our headliner of the evening. I'll eventually stop saying breakdown. You know, it's been like two, three years since we stopped saying that, but I'll eventually.
Oh, it is a breakdown. It's just you're confusing it with main event.
That's what it is. But our headliner of the evening will be our breakdown. There we go. Of Mufasa, the Lion King. The latest prequel that I'm sure nobody asked for.
Anyway, honestly, that's the, like, even if we were doing weekly watch like we were supposed to, like, I wouldn't have anything to put on it.
Oh, really? I mean, I had a couple. I don't know, actually. No, because, like, I think the last, like, movie I watched, and it wasn't really even a movie because it was like a two-part series, was that To Catch a Killer, Gacy thing that came out.
It doesn't count.
Yeah, it doesn't. So that, though, that was really good.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think if I've me and the wife have attempted to watch Gladiator 2. Like, we literally got like 2 minutes in before the kids woke up. And I'm like, are you actually shitting me?
I hope you guys can eventually watch it. No, because I don't want to talk about Sinners, because I'm assuming we'll be doing a breakdown of that eventually.
I'd say, yeah, eventually. Yeah. No, I was just saying, there's a few movies out there that have been released that I'd like to talk about, like Novocaine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, have you seen that?
No.
So good.
Ah, gosh.
Yeah, that was good. I was able to catch the re-release of Revenge of the Sith and loved it even more watching that on the big screen. That was fantastic. I will say, I know, Caleb, I know you really enjoy you had a good time with the Minecraft movie, but I absolutely despise the director now.
Why?
Because I'm assuming you've heard the whole chicken jockey meme thing with what's happening in theaters.
Yeah.
Okay. The director, I don't know his name, straight up said, I don't know why people are getting so mad about this. Nobody got hurt from popcorn. Yeah, that's true. But you're not the one that has to clean that shit up. You think it's okay for people to trash movie theaters. And it's not like, and these, they're not fans like excited. Like, you know, like it's not like Avengers Endgame where like people are like excited for a moment, like their popcorn accidentally like flies out of their hands. No, these are just freaking stupid high schoolers going to this movie, and when that scene comes on, they film themselves shouting chicken jockey, doing stupid shit, all just to hopefully get a viral video.
Yeah, like I understand, like, because I know he is getting shit for like for creating that moment, and he's just like, okay, but like it's not, I guess it's for him, it's just like, it's not my responsibility how people react to my movie.
Like, and that's the, like, I wouldn't be mad at him if he hadn't have said that comment, like, people don't get hurt from popcorn. Like, yeah, true, nobody gets hurt from popcorn, maybe unless you get butter in the eye, but you're not a movie theater employee, dude. You don't have to clean up that mess.
Yeah, that's fair. That is kind of a dick move.
Did you, I'm assuming you've seen some of the videos.
Oh, I've seen so many of them. I saw some dude that brought a live chicken.
Yeah. Did you see what movie theater that was?
Oh, no.
It was the Provo Cinemark.
Dead
serious. Cause freaking the people that like, cause like it was filmed in so many different angles. It's insane.
Right. But everyone and their mother has a phone now.
Yeah, but freaking someone actually caught the guy running out of the movie theater with the chicken. I'm just like, that is freaking Provo Cinemark. That's in the Provo Mall.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Oh man. But also, they are also really pushing for it to beat the Super Mario Bros. Movie for highest grossing video game adaptation, because they're re-releasing it this weekend to coincide with the whole meme culture, that to where, like, I'm assuming that something's going to happen with the chicken jockey, that like something's going to flash on the screen referring to the meme. They're going to have it to where you can sing along with all the songs. And I don't know, personally, just, I don't want it to be the Super Mario Bros. Movie. I want that to still be number one, but I'm afraid that after this release, it's going to beat it. Cause it's at 800 million worldwide.
You can't, when a movie like this is going to do some cheap move. And it, like, honestly, I've grown to know that in my heart that this is what Avengers Endgame did. When you're going to come back with a re-release of a new movie just so you can get into that top slot, that's kind of a bitch move.
Yeah, I mean, it ended up not mattering because, you know, Avatar re-released and took the spot. Yeah, right back. What?
Dude, just like, could you not just sit there and know in your heart that you were better?
Yeah, no, like I don't love the first Avatar. I really enjoy the second one. And so I was on cloud nine knowing that Avengers Endgame, the movie that was the 10-year buildup from the beginning of the MCU, was the number one highest grossing movie of all time, not adjusted for inflation, that it was the highest grossing movie of all time. That just made you feel so good as a Marvel fan. I'm sure you felt the same way.
I did. Again, and then, I did feel a way because they went about it and released this unreleased footage and shit. And it was like a super incomplete, stupid looking version of the Hulk. And I'm like, no.
Yeah. But James Cameron's no better.
James Cameron, I mean, like, he just really re-released the movie, right? Like,
No, he didn't add anything or anything. I don't even know if they did like 3D showings, because Avatar made a lot of its money from 3D showings. And I don't even know if they did that.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I'm just like, really, dude? Like, come on.
Yeah, bitch move, but
why you gotta be a dick?
Yeah, you can let us have that for like a minute.
Yeah. We got what, like a whole 6 months? Like, it wasn't even a full year.
This is how I would have handled it personally. If I was James Cameron, I would have been like, okay, let Marvel have their time to shine and whatever, be number one for X amount of time. And then right before Avatar 2 comes out, then do a re-release and just be like, and then you take the number one slot back because everyone's excited, because not only are you getting the money for the people that are pumped to see number two, like, you're getting like all the people that are like, oh shit, like, we can go see one and two.
Yeah, see, that would have made perfect sense.
Yeah, and then it's just like, and then you retake the top slot, and everything's good in the world.
Yeah, like, you're just like, okay, you won it fair and square.
Yeah, like okay, like, you guys had your moment, like, we're taking it back now.
Yeah,
like that, I would have been so much happier with that. Other, like, because he did a re-release while Endgame was still in theaters, didn't he?
It was either that or like just a couple months after.
Yeah, like it was close enough where I'm just like, bitch move.
Yeah, like,
absolute bitch move.
Endgame didn't even have the top spot for 6 months.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah,
that's absolute bullshit.
So
you could have done it in such a more classy way.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly your way that you said, with re-releasing it right before Avatar 2 comes out.
Yeah.
But so, I personally hate that they're doing that for Minecraft, and I really hope that it doesn't beat the Super Mario Bros. Movie, because I think the Super Mario Bros. Movie is a better movie tenfold.
I'll give you that. Dude, frickin' Iris has been, like, anytime she plays Minecraft now, she's all like, she's just sitting there. She'll be building the, like a little tree. Like today she was building a Christmas tree and she was putting lights on it. And like the whole time she's just la la la.
See, like moments like that, like, see, like if it's like, you know, kids singing along to the songs or they get excited when they got excited for the chicken jockey, that's fine. Like kids getting excited for it and like screaming it along, that's fine. I love seeing that. But freaking when it's high school or even like junior high kids that just to be little assholes are freaking, you know, throwing their drinks around, popcorn. I've seen videos where people shot off fireworks in the movie theater when Chicken Jockey came on. I'm just like,
too much.
People. Yeah. Like, too much. Really, like, come on.
Man, there's always someone that ruins the experience for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, listen, I'm not going to be upset. Like really either way. I get once again, it's just like, sure. Go ahead. Pull this bitch move. But like, I hope Nintendo, because Nintendo's classy. I bet they do what I said, like what I like hope that they do. And when they release Super Mario Brothers 2, then they do the whole re-release, knock Minecraft off its pedestal, and then go straight into Super Mario 2.
I'll tell you which one I wish did better. I mean, it almost hit 500 million worldwide, but I wish the Sonic movies did better.
Me too, dude.
Like, I wish Sonic 3 got so... As much as I love the Super Mario Bros. Movie, I would have been totally fine. I would have loved it if Sonic the Hedgehog 3 beat it for the highest grossing video game movie of all time.
Same. Dude, that movie still freaking hits.
Yeah, it's so freaking good.
Yeah, I freaking love that shit, man. Anyway.
Yeah, so after that rant... adding one more thing, a good example of, you know, like fans, like not like, you know, like doing that kind of shit, but like actually, you know, like just excited for like the moment and everything. I remember like when me and my buddy JC saw Revenge of the Sith, there's an introduction by Hayden Christensen saying, you know, thank you for coming to the 20th anniversary of Revenge of the Sith. I hope you're excited to watch Anakin's turn to the dark side. Please enjoy the movie. And people just before even like the Star Wars logo cheered, they're just like, whoa, yeah, that's fine. I love seeing that stuff.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with fan interaction.
Yeah.
There's absolutely something wrong with fans being freaking dipshits.
Yeah. So like I loved seeing those two, like comparing those two different reactions. Cause like I've seen a lot of people's reactions with Revenge of the Sith that have all been positive, like doesn't ruin anybody's experience. And then there's all the Minecraft shit.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you've seen it, but a lot of screenings when Anakin's about to kill all the younglings and the one kid's just like, there's too many of them. What are we going to do? And his lightsaber turns on. I've seen so many audiences cheer when his lightsaber comes out. I was like, damn.
Dude, I saw one where it was a theater full of people that, like, when that was said, just, like, he turns his lightsaber on, and then everyone in the audience, like, turns their lightsabers on, too.
Okay, that's awesome.
Like, you guys, like, are friggin' hilarious.
Oh, shit. When people were, like, cheery, I was expecting, like, someone to just shout out, yeah, fuck them kids, bro.
Dude, my favorite joke is when I forget which movie it's in. I think it's Rise of Skywalker, when she has that blade and she's like, while she's holding it, she's talking about like, this blade has done horrible things, like all everyone's like, yeah, all while she's holding the Youngling Slayer 9000.
Oh man.
Are you shitting me?
Dude, freaking Star Wars fans don't mess around, because I saw a video for The Force Awakens, like I think it was opening night, and someone, it was like the, like, you know, like did the classic Star Wars logo, and it was right before the crawl started, and someone started pulling out like their phone, but like their flash was on, and someone just shouts, are you fucking kidding me? Turn that shit off. Just loses it. Oh man. But anyway,
like, sorry. Being part of a fandom is such a hit and miss experience.
It is.
Because sometimes you get freaking chicken jockey, like those assholes, and then sometimes you get freaking like the end game on your left reaction.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, dude.
I'll never forget that.
Never. That was so good.
Yeah.
Marvel's good at shit like that.
They really are.
I'm so pumped, dude. I'm excited to see like what other moments like that can be captured.
Yeah, same here.
Because I feel eventually they're going to like overstay their welcome. But
yeah, I don't look forward to that day. But
yeah,
hopefully it doesn't happen anytime soon.
Yeah.
But anyway, what do you say we jump into Mufasa? As you guys can tell, we have a lot to say about that movie.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I got quite a bit. So yeah, let's get into that.
All right, let's do it.
Need motivation? Angry Dad Podcast. Trying to jumpstart your life? Angry Dad Podcast. You want help getting off the couch? Angry Dad Podcast. You need a verbal kick in the ass? Angry Dad Podcast. You want to hear from somebody who's been through it all? Angry Dad Podcast. I am here for you. You can find me on all podcast platforms.
All right, so jumping right into our headliner of the evening, which, like we said earlier, is our breakdown of Mufasa, the Lion King. Caleb, do you want to let people know how we break down movies on this podcast?
I would love to. If you are new to our breakdown system, we have split movies into 8 different categories that we individually score to come to a final All Bros letter grade. The 8 categories that we will be scoring are story, writing, acting, character development, effects, music, costumes, which in this case would be more character design than anything. And then give it our own personal score at the very end. All of those numbers get magically added up and spit through our algorithm and give us a letter grade to compare this movie to others of a similar grade, as well as percentage that gives us a ranking of everything. But that's not nearly as important as the grade itself, despite things you may have heard.
Despite someone's comments, DJ, excuse me.
Yeah. So if you have not seen Mufasa, the Lion King, you might be fine.
It's not horrible, but it's not great either. Like it's decent.
Yeah. Listen, if you like Lion King,
you're going to like this one.
Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning either way, but you might be fine.
I will say though, maybe just because the freaking live action remake was a beat for beat remake, I think I liked this better. Maybe just because it was actually different.
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I could give you that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So if you have not seen Mufasa the Lion King, we are about to spoil the entire freaking thing for you in our favorite segment that we like to call Reading with Rose.
All right. After Simba becomes king of the Pride Lands, he and Nala have a daughter named Kiara and are expecting another cub. They leave for an oasis where Nala can give birth while Simba asks Timon and Pumbaa to watch over Kiara. Wow, I missed the period there. While Simba asks Timon and Pumbaa to watch over Kiara, Rafiki soon visits them and decides to share the story about her grandfather, Mufasa, with Timon and Pumbaa providing color commentary in between. Mufasa and his parents, Masego and Afia, I know I butchered those names, but we're just going to go with it, search for the mythical Mlele. A flood sweeps Mufasa into a wetland where he meets Taka, a royal cub. They are attacked by young crocodiles until Taka's mother, Queen Eshe, intervenes. She accepts Mufasa, but Taka's father, King Obasi, criticizes him for befriending an outsider. Obasi holds a race between his son and Mufasa to determine whether the latter can join his pride. When Mufasa lags due to exhaustion, Taka throws the race so he can stay. As Mufasa and Taka grow up, they form a strong bond, though Obasi continually tries to keep Taka with him and orders Mufasa to stay with the lionesses. Eshe teaches Mufasa to hunt and use his senses, among other life skills. While out hunting one day, two white lions attack them. Eshe takes a hit, so Mufasa jumps in to help her. He ends up killing one, and together they force the other to flee. Taka witnesses the attack, but retreats in fear. The survivor, Azebo, informs Kiros, leader of the Outsiders, a pride composed of lions who were outcasted from their respective prides for their white fur. Kiros seeks vengeance for the death of his son, Shagu, who Mufasa killed, and approaches Obasi's pride. Sensing them coming, Mufasa warns them and is ordered to flee with Taka. When they arrive, the Outsiders slaughter Obasi, Eshe, and the rest of their pride off-screen. Mufasa and Taka escape them by jumping off a waterfall and into a river. When Mufasa and Taka reach land, they encounter a stray lioness named Zarabi, whose family was killed by the Outsider Pride, her hornbill scout Zazu, and eventually a younger Rafiki. Rafiki tells them he is going to Malele to find a brother he saw in prophetic. Yeah, is that how you say it? Prophetic visions?
Yeah, that sounds okay. About right.
And the group follows him there. Taka develops romantic feelings for Sarabi. I don't know grammar. The Outsiders continue to pursue them, so Sarabi causes an elephant stampede to distract and disorient the Outsiders, allowing the group to escape. She is knocked unconscious after falling into the stampede's path, causing Mufasa to save her. Out of loyalty, he lies and tells Sarabi that Taka saved her. The group heads through a snowy mountain range, following Rafiki's direction, with Zazu covering their tracks in the snow. Sarabi tells Mufasa that she knows he saved her, and they soon fall in love. Secretly watching this, a jealous Taka meets Kiros and the lost and hungry Outsiders, offering a proposition for Kiros to get revenge on Mufasa for his son's death in exchange for Taka joining his pride. The next day, the group reaches Malele, a lush oasis with Taka secretly leaving marks for the Outsiders to follow. Rafiki finds the tree from his vision and claims Mufasa as his brother before the Outsiders attack. Mufasa learns of Taka's treachery while fighting Kiros. Despite this, Mufasa rallies the animals in Malele to fight off the Outsiders. Kiros forces Mufasa into a cave and prepares to finish him off. Seeing his brother exhausted and realizing what he has done, a remorseful Taka intervenes, causing Kiros to slash Taka's eye, leaving a scar. Rafiki causes an earthquake, which kills the Outsiders and causing Mufasa and Kiros to fall into a cave lake. Kiros attempts to drown Mufasa, but a falling rock allows Mufasa to send Kiros plummeting to his death, and he swims away to safety. Mufasa has trouble getting out of the water, but is again saved by Taka in a similar way to when they were cubs. Taka narrowly resists the temptation to drown him. Mufasa and Sarabi exit the cave together as the animals celebrate their victory. The animals, in gratitude for Mufasa uniting them against the Outsiders, make him king of Malele. Mufasa is soon reunited with Afia, who tells him that Masego died in the previous flood. Mufasa confronts Taka about his betrayal and allows him to stay, but refuses to refer to Taka by his name anymore. Taka renames himself Scar, and Mufasa then ascends upon the newly formed Pride Rock and roars triumphantly, becoming a king with Scar watching from behind. Back in the present, Kiara roars at the skies as the spirit of her grandfather looms over her. She and her friends soon reunite with Simba to meet her newly born sibling, to whom Kiara offers to tell Mufasa's story.
I'll be real. This is going to be a really tough one for me.
So you hated it that much?
No, I didn't hate it. It was just it's
the problem with this movie is it's just so unnecessary.
It is.
Like we didn't need this. Like don't like, you know, like the way that they told it, like yeah, it was fine. Like I will admit I had a decent time throughout. Like the performances were good. The songs actually I thought were pretty good, some better than others. But just yeah, like when they got towards the end and you know, I already forgot the bad guy's name. Is it Kiros? Kiros? Yeah, Kiros. When he freaking slashes Taka's eye And, you know, then that leads to Mufasa saying, oh, I can never call you my brother anymore. I can't call you Taka anymore. He's like, well, then just call me Scar. I'm like, oh, good Lord.
Yeah, dude, for real. I'm like, are you shitting me? That's how you're going to do it?
That's how you got the... Okay, all right.
Like, that's so dumb.
Like, and I feel like it felt like the way that they built up Taka's story, like how him and Mufasa were, you know, cubs together, that Mufasa was like, was his adopted brother, the relationship that they had. Like, I really actually really enjoyed their brother relationship from beginning to when shit hit the fan. Like, I actually really liked that. But just the fact that, you know, you're leading up to him getting his name Scar, and that's what you go with because he actually had got a scar. Like, I thought it would be more symbolic. Like, yeah, like, I know he has the scar in The Lion King, but I thought there would be more meaning behind that.
Dude, for real, though. This, like, I was thinking all day of how they could have done that better. And there's so many different ways. Like... What's the bad guy's name again?
Kyros.
Kyros. I personally feel that Kyros should have given his, like, Scar his name.
Yeah, that would have made more sense.
Yeah, like, I think it should have been that. I also thought, like, okay, like, here's how, like, what I thought. I'm like, oh, this is going to be tied to how he was, like, marking the path to where they were at.
Like, yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
I'm like, okay, so, like, it's because he's leaving these scars on the land that are leading them to this area. So I was like, okay, like, I can dig this. I can dig this. And then, no, it's just like, just call me Scar. And then he turns around and walks away. And I'm like, what the was that? Like, I was so pissed, dude. I'm like, they rushed so hard.
They did. They tried to set up this origin story for Mufasa and Taka and their relationship and how we got from the beginning to their relationship in The Lion King. And the one thing, one of the top things that, like, I feel should be, there should be some backstory behind the, you know, with him being, his name being Scar, why everyone calls him Scar. That storyline that should have had, you know, like, a lot of backstory to it, should actually had focus on it, is rushed like that.
Yeah.
You're building up to this moment and there's like, oh no, he names himself that. It's not like he's given that nickname.
Yeah. But he should have been cursed with the name.
Yeah.
Like, it should have been something that he announced to the, yeah, he should have announced it. Like, Mufasa should have been the one to be like, like, I can no longer call you my brother. You are no longer Taka to me. Like, for, like, basically to make sure you never forget what you've done by marking the land to lead our enemies to us. Like, I now deem you Scar. Like, it should have been something like that.
No, yeah. So, like, he could have been, like, it could have been, like, kind of, like, symbolic. Like, you are literally a scar on this... this land, on this tribe, and so that's what we're gonna call you now. You're a scar. You're Scar.
Yeah, like, oh God, dude, I was so pissed. I was so pissed off, and I don't know, dude. Like, there was so much bullshit here. Like,
I will say, freaking. Maybe it's just me, but, like, the fact that it's just because it's been done to death, the fact that it's a girl that is what gets in between Mufasa and Taka, I'm just like,
of course.
I'm just like, a freaking course. Like, no, it's not because, you know, one, well, I mean, you know, Taka ends up, you know, turning on Mufasa, but that wasn't, like, the thing that, like, the biggest reason why Taka turned against Mufasa. No, it's because Mufasa got the girl. Like, really? Like,
yeah, what a basic bitch story, dude.
Seriously, you set up, like, you go out of your way to set up the brother relationship between these two, how Taka did everything that he could as a cub to make sure that Mufasa wasn't killed by his dad, that Mufasa was taken care of. And then freaking as they grow up, you know, like, yeah, Mufasa, they still are taking care of each other. But what drives them apart is this new lioness comes into play. I'm like, really?
Yeah. Something else should have been the catalyst to them separating. Like, I'm trying to think of what else it could have been. Like, I think this is personally how I would have handled it. I think that it should have been where more and more people, not just the girl, but more and more people should have joined their like little pride that they had. Like, I think that they should have had like an elephant. They should have had a rhino, a hippo, like all these other creatures should have kind of joined their pack and all of them start to rally behind Mufasa. Like, and then like any like suggestion, and then it's just like then Taka is just getting more and more jealous because he's just like, he's not of noble blood like I am, yet they rally behind him, and it should have become more of a jealousy thing of like, I'm the noble that like of noble blood here, not him.
Yeah.
Like, why are they following him? And then it's just, and then, yeah, show the little reasons why, like the cowardice of Taka, like not even attempting to save what's her face.
I already forgot her name.
I know. I'm going to pull up a cast list real quick. Sarabi.
That's what it is.
Yeah. It's just like one of those things. Like, why are you going out of your way to give us just a basic bitch story? Like, ooh, like Scar got jealous. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like if you're really enough to tear apart brothers.
No. Yeah, exactly. If your brother relationship is as strong and meaningful as they build it up to be, literally it would take the end of the world for you guys to like have a falling out. And the fact that it's a girl that makes these two have a falling out, no, I call bullshit.
Yeah. Especially one that they've only known a few days.
Yeah. Like,
at least, or just whatever the timeline is, it doesn't seem like it's very long.
No. But yeah, just that, like, you know, like speaking of, you know, personal experience, I feel like truly it would take the end of the world for me and Caleb to have a falling out. It really would. We've been through too much shit together. Nowhere in my mind would it think, considering that he's married, would it be that a girl would be the falling out between the two of us?
Yeah, not likely.
Yeah.
Like, it just, I don't know. It's just lazy. Because it's just that is the stereotypical driving point, like it's the stereotypical wedge between like best friends or brother, like any between any two men. You throw a woman in the middle, and that's like as stereotypical as you can get. Like, oh, and this is what breaks them apart, and like their brotherly bond. It's just like no,
that's just stupid.
Yeah, like maybe I don't even know, dude. Like maybe if their relationship was weaker, I could have like accepted it better. But I think they should have just kept laying on that Mufasa was just a natural born leader and no one liked Taka.
Yeah. Yeah, no, because your idea is freaking great. Like that would have made so much more sense.
Yeah, it should have been based off of jealousy of title, not jealousy of over a girl.
Yeah, like that. I want to know how many writers were on this movie, because I want to know the specific writer who thought that was a good plot twist.
Yeah, looks like there's only one credited writer.
Oh, what's his name?
Jeff Nathanson.
All right, Jeff, well, you need to go to school of not picking the most stereotypical way of breaking up a relationship. You need to learn
brother.
What?
Oh, my hell.
Uh-oh.
Oh,
no.
So, listen, he's had some good stuff.
Okay.
Oh, hold on. I want to make sure that he's, like, not the only. Okay, that one doesn't count because he was part of a team. This one doesn't count, part of a team. So, okay, so he has writing credits from Rush Hour 2, part of a team.
Greatest sequel of all time.
Catch Me If You Can, like a part of a team. The Terminal, part of a team. Rush Hour 3, part of a team.
Okay.
Oh, this is going to be the kicker, dude.
Oh, no.
Okay. He doesn't get full credit for this, but Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, but he was part of a team.
Oh, God. It's adding up. It's making sense now.
Good Lord. Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tale.
Oh, dude.
He wrote the screenplay for Lion King, the OG remake.
Huh.
Young Woman in the Sea, part of a team. That's a Daisy Ridley movie.
Okay.
And then Mufasa.
Wow. Not a great track record.
Not a great track record, my friend.
wow. Okay. Yeah, that really tells me all I need to know.
Yep. Listen, you're not forgiven, but now we get it.
Yeah.
Man.
Because, like, I'm thinking of, like, when, like, have you seen any of the Rush Hour movies?
Yeah, I've seen, I think the only one I haven't seen is one.
Okay. I can't, I swear that they've had a falling out in, like, almost all of them. But when, especially in, like, the second one, I think, like, when they have their falling out, like, I feel the reasoning, like, it makes sense. Like, I can understand why. And, you know, like, they don't go back, like, as far as freaking Mufasa and Taka. So, like, I get why the reasonings why they have a falling out. These two that were literally grew up together, because what, Mufasa found Taka when he was, I mean, I don't know how old, but just a little kid. Growing up from a little kid to an adult, being with that other lion for your whole life, like, yeah, your bond is going to become very close, and it really should take a lot for you guys to literally call it quits with your relationship. Like, that, like, something is going to make it to where one of you turns on the other and just destroys it all, just throws it, flushes it down the toilet. So, like, it seems that the guy is good, has a, is, I guess, known for writing, characters having, breakups, but the Rush Hour ones, like, somewhat, they make a lot more sense than freaking the breakup that we get in this movie.
Yeah. Like, long-term relationships should, something big needs to come in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, something bigger than just a girl.
Yeah.
And it's too much. Like, you're not going to straight up betray your brother over a girl. Like, nope. Listen, are you, like, will you throw him under the bus for a girl? Like, yeah, probably. Like, make him look like an idiot? Sure. You're not going to straight up sentence him to death.
Yeah, no. Because, like, they're still, you know, like, they're still young enough to, yeah, I can understand the, like, oh, yeah, you know, throwing him under the bus, like you said, to just impress the girl. But, yeah, no, I don't care if you're still in that, like, I don't care if you're, like, in, like, the young 20s for, like, lion age. You still would not do that to someone you've, that is literally blood to you, that you grew up together. No, absolutely not.
Yeah. Dude, you know what, like, personally I would have done is just to throw in the connection with the hyenas, is I would have had the hyenas take a part in, like, in the crew that they were building. And then just have them constantly, like, whispering in his ear, just like basically, like, making him jealous about, like, over how everyone's listening to Mufasa over him.
Would love that.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, why are they listening to him? Like, you're the one of noble blood, like that kind of deal. Like, I think that, like, just something to get under his skin a little bit, and then get him to question, like, yeah, like, why? And then obviously I think there would be a bonding between them, because hyenas, like, you could also show the hyenas are also like cowardice. Like, I think you could have played that up something awful.
Like, if you can, and like, for, I feel like they did a decent job. If you can make the connection between Mufasa and Rafiki make sense of how they came together, you can easily bring in the three hyenas and make their connection with Scar or Taka, whatever. Makes sense. Easy.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think that there could have been just other methods of going about this. Like, I think you still could have done the thing like where Taka goes to betray them, but have it be like where he's talked into doing like a double, like kind of a double agent deal where he goes to the people and he's just like, he's trying to deceive them, but really he's just trying to use them to kill Mufasa so he can come in and be the big hero and save Mufasa's life one time. And then it just gets out that I think it should have been some like convoluted way of him to make Mufasa look bad or to save his life to look like the hero. And then ultimately, like, it just gets exposed, and then Mufasa turns on him and just like, I can't even look at you, or blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Damn, man, we could have written a way better prequel.
Straight up.
maybe have two guys that have literally been brothers for many years since junior high write a movie that is about brothers. Just saying, like, it's not a bad idea.
Yeah. I don't know, dude. Like, the way that they hire writers, and it's just like, I don't think it's correct. Like, yeah. If I'm going to hire someone to write me a story that's good, that has some real like heft to it, I'm going to hire people that are familiar with the relationships that I'm shooting for.
Yeah.
Like, it should be like the director has like an idea. Like, this is how it should, this is personally how I think it should go. The director pitches the idea to the studio, the studio okays it, and it's getting ready for they just come in with like a broad idea. Then they're just like, okay, now we need to get a movie script and screenplay written. I'm going to hire a team. The team should be based off of like, this is the relationship or the dynamic that I want to play with. Brothers. I'm only going to hire writers that have brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd even take like brother sister dynamic too. Like, anyone that has a sibling relationship, which obviously most people do.
Yeah.
I would say, I'd be interested to see the statistic on that. Like, how many like only children there are compared to like siblings.
Yeah. I mean, but you could go two different directions with it. Like you mentioned, you know, like siblings, like actual, like, it'd be interesting to see hiring two sets of teams, one that siblings by blood. So, you know, like you and your brothers, and then another team siblings by choice, you and me. It'd be interesting to see how these two teams would write a story based on sibling relationships.
That'd be cool. Like, yeah. Hiring like best friends or like people with like that brotherly bond as a team, like a team unit, that'd be sick.
Yeah.
Like, you could get a really good story out of that. But just talking about like the story overall, like, it had good bones. Like, I think up until once they left the original pride, or like Taka's pride, I think that's where the movie kind of fell apart for me.
Same, honestly. Cause yeah, like, up until then, like, I was actually really enjoying watching these two grow up together. Like, it was actually really nice watching these two form their brotherly bond. But yeah, once they have to evade Taka's pride or tribe. Yeah, the movie definitely falls apart.
Yeah, it's I don't know, it's rough. And then they kept interjecting the like Timon and Pumbaa scenes, like kind of going back to the story that was being told. And I'm like, can you just not? Like, no, like they're funny. Like they're totally like they're funny. Like I really enjoy them as characters, but it's just the way that it kept interjecting into the story. I'm just like, this is too much.
It got annoying how many times they kept saying, wait, we're not in this part. We're not in this. We're not in this. I'm like, no, of course you're not. You didn't come along until Simba was a cub.
Yeah.
No one knew you until then.
Yeah. It was over the top. And it was, like I said, too much.
Yeah.
It was just too much. Like, come on. Like, I understand having them like maybe doing like one interjection or whatever, but not as many as they had. But yeah. Story wise, like this one's tough.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. Personally, I'm in the 70s. I don't know about you.
Lower 70. It's barely cracking 70s for me.
That's fair.
Like, I might be right at a 70.
I think I'm just a little higher than you at a 72.
Okay. All right, next up with writing.
Literally.
Also not great.
Yeah. No, it was not. Because, going with what you said about, like, Timon and Pumbaa, like, yeah, I kind of got a little annoying as, you know, you're watching this you're listening to this story from Rafiki and how he's telling Nala and Simba's daughter, I forgot her name,
Kiara,
thank you. He's telling her, you know, like the story of her grandfather, and like you're honestly getting into it at some parts. Like he's, you know, like of course, you know, like you're not hearing his voice over the whole movie, but you know, Rafiki's a good storyteller. But like, it felt like you could be getting up. It could be building up into an important moment. And then all of a sudden it would switch back to present time and Timon and Pumbaa being like, wait, what? We're not in this part either. Like, oh, come on. We totally helped out. Like, why aren't we included in this? And I'm just like, I get that you're trying to, they're inserted into this movie for comic relief. I get that. And I understand why you wanted to, you know, bring back Timon and Pumbaa. I get it, you know, like how you wanted to tell this prequel story that, you know, we start out in the present time. It's being told as a past story, you know, how Rafiki's telling it. Except I love Timon and Pumbaa. I really do. But I don't love how much they wrote them into being interjecting into this movie. Maybe I would feel different if like it had like the vibes of like the Lion King 1.5, where it was like, you know, Timon and Pumbaa's movie. But this is supposed to be the story of how Mufasa became Mufasa, what happened between Mufasa and Taka's relationship or Scar. And so it took you out of the movie when Timon and Pumbaa would interject. Like I said, as much as I love them, and I especially love Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen in these roles, it just sucks that it like just takes you out of the story like that.
It does. Honestly, I would love to see like a Lion King 1.5 remake.
Dude, yeah, I would too. Because like you said, I love those two as the characters. They're fantastic. And so like more of them, please, but just in a different movie.
Dude, I didn't feel like that like initially. I'm just like, but like the thing that like solidified that for me was when they were basically retelling the end of the Lion King with them being the heroes. I'm like, bro, this is awesome.
Yeah. I know, maybe considering that Mufasa was pretty successful, $200 million budget, and it made over $700 million. Maybe we could get a live action remake of The Lion King 1.5.
That would be a ballsy move. Like
even if you made it just a Disney Plus exclusive.
Oh, I would love that.
I think people would be happy.
Dude, straight up. Screw doing Disney remakes of like the OG shit. Do remakes of the sequels that you did.
Yes. Yeah. The direct-to-DVD sequels. Yes.
How dope would that be?
That would be amazing.
Like straight up, dude, I would lose my shit over getting Peter Pan Return to Neverland live action.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. That would be amazing. I feel, you know, I don't know if they could make it work, but like one, I'd be interested to see what they could do. 101 Dalmatians 2. I know that's like a sequel that I just love to death that like I kind of want to see, but like I have a feeling that it would probably be a train wreck trying to make that into live action.
I could see it though.
Yeah. Okay.
I could see it. I want them to do just a straight up 101 Dalmatians with Emma Stone's Cruella.
Yes, please. Yes. So good in the role. So good. That like she has earned the right to get to actually play full on Cruella.
Yeah, for real. I bet she'd have a blast with that role too.
Oh yeah, dude. 100%.
Yeah. Gosh, dude, writing wise, I might be lower.
That's fair. I have a hard time dropping this movie like into the 60s because I don't think it's that awful personally. So like, but like it barely stops itself from hitting the 60s. So like writing, I'm at a 70.
Yeah. Well, like the writing issues that I have come from like the bullshit way that they ended it, where it's just like, just call me Scar, and then he walks off.
Yeah.
Like they ended it so quick.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
Like, I think that's where like 99% of my problems come in. It's near the end. Like the last, honestly, I'd say about 20 to 25 minutes were rough.
I will say one thing that personally I would have changed also at the end, when Sarabi, is that Simba's daughter's name?
That was the girl.
That was the girlfriend. What was the daughter's name again?
Kiara.
Thank you. Sorry. You know, when she meets her new little brother and she's like, let me tell you the story about our grandfather. Personally, I wouldn't have had her say that. I would have had her say something like, I promise to be the best big sister. Like something like, I promise to be the best big sister you could possibly ask for. I promise like nothing will ever tear our sibling relationship apart. Like something that like kind of stresses the relationship that happened between Mufasa and Taka, like how their sibling relationship was broken apart. But what was her name again? Wow.
Kiara.
Wow.
You weren't even close.
Yeah. But I would have loved to see Kiara just emphasize with her new little brother, like, no, like that's not going to happen to us. Like we are going to make sure that our sibling bonds stay strong.
I'll be 100% real. I thought that the way that they were going to end it was by her saying, I've always wanted a brother. And I would be like,
I actually would have loved that. Personally, I would have loved that.
I have a feel we're going to be very divided when it comes to music.
Yeah, probably.
Oh my gosh, dude. Like, I understood the sentiment when like Taka basically gave up the race for Mufasa to win,
yeah,
and everything. And that, like, I had the same freaking thought that Mufasa pointed out, where he's just like, man, I had to slow down to let you win, and blah, 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 blah. And he's just like, yeah, I also haven't eaten in days. And, and I'm like, dude, like,
I'm tired as fuck, dude. Like, yeah. Come on.
Like, I really haven't slept and I haven't eaten in days. And I'm like, so, yeah, straight up.
I think I have an excuse.
Yeah. It's like, what was yours?
Exactly.
It's like, you should have beat me by a mile.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, I'm writing wise, dude. Like, I had so many issues. I'm sitting at a 68.
Completely fair. Completely fair.
Yeah, I also didn't. I don't know. Like, Timon and Pumbaa were a bit much, just at times. Like I said, love those two, but they need their own movie.
They do. Hashtag make the Lion King 1.5 live action remake.
Yes, please. you know how much more excited I'd be for if instead of them being like, yeah, we're going to remake Lion King. No, remake 1.5.
Dude, freaking, if they would have announced that instead of this prequel, I think people would have actually gotten behind that. And especially, of course, bringing back Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen. Like, because those two are just, I mean, we'll get to that with acting, but like, I freaking just love those two in the roles.
Yeah. All right, moving on over to acting.
I will add, I accidentally left two out. And I will bring them up right now. I left out on accident Young Rafiki's voice actor, as well as the girl that breaks Mufasa and Taka apart.
Oh, Sarabi?
Yes.
Okay.
So just adding those names in really quickly. Kagiso Ladiga played Young Rafiki. And then
Tiffany Boone.
Tiffany, thank you.
For Sarabi.
She's like far down on the cast. What up with that? Or at least on...
Are you looking at IMDb?
No, I was pulling it up on Google.
Oh. Yeah, like if you pull it up on IMDb, she's like third.
Yeah, she's not... What the hell, Google? She's not even like the first 10 people here. That's so weird. Yeah, that's weird. Sorry.
No, you're good. Yeah, so one sec, just need to make a note. Yeah, so going through this cast list, first up, we have Aaron Pierre, who voices Mufasa, which I don't know if you knew, if you probably do know this, but he's going to be playing Jon Stewart in the DCU.
Yeah, I do remember you telling me about that. And, you know, I liked his voice here, so I'm excited.
Yeah, he's got a really good look about him, dude.
He does.
But yeah, Aaron Pierre, Mufasa. Then we got Kelvin Harrison Jr., who voices Taka, which he nailed the same cadence of Scar.
He did.
Like, it not necessarily like in the beginning, but once he like at the end of the movie and he started was like talking to the outsiders and everything. Like, he matched that cadence so well.
He did. Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, so he freaking knocked that out of the park. Let's see. Then we got Blue Ivy Carter, who voiced Kiara.
See, I got them mixed up. I thought Kiara was the love interest, so that's why she's so far up on the cast list. My bad.
Fair enough. Let's see. We got Theo Somalu, who voices young Taka, Braylon Rankins, who voices young Mufasa, Lenny James, who voices Obasi, Thandaway Newton, who voices Eshi, which I think is Mufasa's mother, right?
Taka's mom.
Okay. Mads Mikkelsen, who voices Kiros. Perfect villain casting.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love him so much. He's such a great actor.
Underrated as all hell, dude.
He is. Seriously.
Yeah, then we got Preston Nyman, who voices Sazu. I don't understand why they just didn't bring back John Oliver, dude.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, guy did a good impression.
Yeah, but, I mean, he did all right, but yeah. I just like, I feel like you still could have gone different, like, gone the John Oliver route.
Maybe they wanted to go the cheaper route.
Yeah, maybe. Let's see. John Canny, who does the voice for Rafiki.
Or I guess old Rafiki.
Old Rafiki.
Yeah.
Freaking perfection.
Oh, yeah. Great as always.
Yeah. Billy Eichner, who did the voice for Timon. who he's perfection.
He is. Love him.
Then we got Seth Rogen, who does the voice for Pumbaa.
And then that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. My bad for leaving out those two at the beginning that I said. Oops.
No, you're good. I have a feeling our top three is going to look the same. Maybe. Like, what's your top three look like?
I probably, like, I don't know. It's kind of a coin flip between Aaron and, what's the guy's name that played Taka?
Kelvin.
I think it's a coin flip between those two for one and two. Because, like, honestly, both of them did really, really good. So I can't decide between one or the other. But
ooh, I can.
I'm assuming is it Taka's voice?
Or Taka's voice, number one, yeah, for me. Yeah. Like, and honestly, they were like side by side, like through the entire movie until he went off to talk to the outsider. And I heard that cadence of Scar and I was like, ooh, there we go. That's what I was looking for. Yeah, yeah, it freaking shot him to top spot for me.
All right. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to agree with you. Yeah. Yeah. He's number one, but then Aaron Pierre, Mufasa number two. So Kelvin Harrison Jr., Taka number one, Aaron Pierre, Mufasa number two, number three, I think just because like, I loved his energy as him and I just thought he was just adorable. The kid that played young Taka.
Ooh, I thought not who I thought you were gonna go.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would give him number three. The kid that played young Mufasa, like really good. But Theo Somolu, yeah, just I loved his energy as young Taka. Like it was great. So I would give him number three.
Yeah. I am actually going with someone that is not on this list. I'm going with Kagiso Ladiga, who did Young Rafiki.
Good choice.
He nailed the performance, like trying to do Young Rafiki.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he did. Yeah. No, excellent choice.
Yeah, I thought he did so good, dude. Like he matched like the cadence and everything that John Canny was doing, but obviously just with the lighter voice and whatnot. And I loved him. Yeah. I thought he was so good. I thought all the joke, like I love that he kind of had the same energy about him. Like he has like that young energy that Rafiki was giving Simba. Like just where he was like smacking Simba on the head with shit and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like he has that same vibe. And I'm like, oh, I'm just waiting for Mufasa to get bushwhacked with something. But I loved his performance. I thought he was so good. So yeah, I'm giving him number three.
Fair. Good choice.
Yeah. Where are you sitting at score wise?
So I feel the acting personally is the strongest of this movie because I feel for the most part the voice cast is actually pretty damn good. Like everyone that was picked for their character did a pretty damn good job. So I think for acting personally, I think I'm about an 84.
That's pretty good. I'm a hair lower than you. I don't think it quite cracked the 80s for me. I'm sitting at 78. Like I think everyone did like a pretty good performance. I don't think that there was anyone that stood out too much above the rest other than the guy who voiced Taka. And it's just because, like I said, he was able to match the cadence of Scar from the previous remake.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
And yeah, like that's the only one that's I feel was like above and beyond. Everyone else, like I don't think they were quite there.
Yeah.
Like they felt everyone's kind of felt new to voice acting.
That's fair.
I don't know. There's just something there was just something off. I couldn't quite put my finger on it. It's just something was off with the performances. So yeah, I'm sitting at 78. Fair.
That's fair.
All right, next up we got character development.
Yeah, so like, are we, which are we doing, Mufasa or Taka here?
This one's hard. So it's especially with a prequel on something that's pre-existing, we have to, I feel like we have to judge it based on how they got to the relationship that we see in the original or in the first.
Okay. If they were talking about that, oh boy. Okay.
Yeah. No bueno.
No. And it sucks because I feel you had a good enough start. And like, I feel we talked a lot about this in the story. So I feel like a good amount of the character development we covered in the story, us talking about that. But just, you had such a, I feel a pretty damn good setup of how these two brothers met, that how their relationship formed from young cubs to grown lions, just, and like, I feel for the most part, they actually did like a good job. Like, I bought these two having a strong brother connection. Like, I definitely bought it, but then you just had to ruin it bringing in this random girl. I hate to be that kind of person, but just random chick that both of them fall for. Well, I guess Mufasa doesn't fall for her first, but Taka sure does, but Mufasa eventually does. And that's what drives them apart. And that's what leads freaking Taka to turning against Mufasa and him getting his name Scar and it being stupid as hell. Just, I'd say like a decently solid setup of where you could have taken these two's relationships and how, or these two's relationship and how that ended to where they are in The Lion King. But you just threw it out the window when you decided to bring the female love interest in.
I will be like totally real here. They didn't need to bring in a love interest at all.
No, like, they didn't.
They very well could have just been like, they could have brought her in, yes, but not given, like, not let, like, I think them pushing, like, because I think, like, it's shown or at least mentioned in the original Lion King that Scar had a thing for Sarabi, because Sarabi's Simba's mother.
Yeah.
So I think it was stated that he had a thing for her at some point, and she was just like, no. Like, I think that they handled that well, but, like, Mufasa was trying to be, like, a wingman. I think it should have been, like, Scar's handling of that whole situation that should have killed the relationship between him and Sarabi. Like, and yeah. I think that they could have ended the movie without Mufasa and Sarabi being an item. Like, it could have just been, like, heavily implied or whatever. Like, maybe she goes and, like, walks up next to him, like, while he's standing on the Pride Rock. Which, the Pride Rock was so fuck... Ooh, man.
Almost caught Caleb slipping.
Oh, just a little bit, dude. I got worked up about how that happened. I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, this is how Pride Rock happened. Like, it's just a earthquake. Like, this is so ridiculous.
That was so dumb.
Yeah, I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, come on. Like, come on. So, it was silly. It was so silly. And I didn't care for it. But it's just, I think that's how I would have preferred them to kind of do that implication of how, like, Sarabi and Mufasa got together. Like, it should have just been, like, lightly implied. It shouldn't have been, like, laid on as thick as it was, where she's just, like, straight up going for him, and she's just like, I know that, like, you're the one that protected me. It's just like, then why didn't you say so, you bitch?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, why didn't you call him out? Like, you were, straight up, you were leading Scar on.
Yeah. Yeah, like, she definitely was.
So dumb. But yeah, it's just, I don't think that they got to that point. Like, it made sense, like, where Scar's head was at, but I don't think they got there naturally at all. I felt it was very heavy-handed how they, like, led us there.
Yeah.
And then just the little things where he like was clawing at his paws to kind of help him up and everything. I'm like, you guys, you did that one too many
times. I'm like, that's, we get it. You're foreshadowing. We get it.
Yeah. Like, you already did this, you assholes.
Yeah. Stop drilling it into our heads. Oh, it's, we're predicting what's going to happen. Shut up. Yeah,
it's like, you ain't predicting shit. Like, we know what comes next. Like, you don't have to freaking lay it on this thick. But yeah, I very unimpressed with the character development here. It was just, it was sloppily put together.
Yeah, it was. What are you thinking?
I'm sitting at 65, dude. Like, I am not loving it.
Yeah, you know what? I know I said that I was really trying not to get this movie into the 60s, but the way that they just butchered how to tell the story of these two brothers and their falling out, just with that one inclusion of a female love interest, or just a love interest, that was just so dumb. Like, so the character development, I think I'm sitting at a 68.
Yeah, I get it. I absolutely get it. All right, moving on over to effects.
They're definitely better than the Lion King, because I feel like it's definitely not great, but they definitely give a lot more emotion. Face wise.
Oh yeah. Dude, this I think this corrected our issues with the Lion King.
Yeah. Like I appreciated that the animals actually showed emotion this time around. Like, thank you for actually listening to people about that.
Yeah.
Like, kudos to you, Disney.
Like, and it didn't take much. It just took some minor adjustments, and you could tell when Mufasa and Taka were talking, it was like you could see almost like a smile on Taka's face. Yeah. I'm like, all right, like it didn't take much.
No, it didn't. It still looked natural. It didn't look like they were, you know, animated characters. It still felt like they were real life animals. Like, yeah, like you said, it didn't take much.
Yeah. Gosh, but I mean, visually though, it looked good. I'm trying to think. Like, it definitely feel like, I don't know what it is, dude, but CGI lately is just feels rubbery. Like especially like full CGI scenes, like it looks rubbery.
Yeah, that's fair.
And like that's something I have to dock for. I'm not gonna dock it a whole ton. Like, I might still be like, I'm really close to a 90. Like, I'm at like 89, but I can't justify going higher than that.
Yeah, you know what, I think I'm gonna match you on that one. Yeah, 89. Yeah, because I'm same with you. It's hard to justify bumping it up to the 90s, because I agree with you. It there were some parts that definitely it felt rubbery with certain scenes and characters.
Yeah.
I especially felt towards the beginning when Rafiki is first about to tell, I'm going to remember her name eventually. What was Simba's daughter's name?
Kiara.
Kiara. Thank you. I don't know why it's so hard for me to remember that name. When he's getting ready to tell her the story of Mufasa, and Timon and Pumbaa jump in, they kind of seemed a little off.
They were. I couldn't put my finger on it, but something was odd about them.
Okay. All right. I'm glad I wasn't the only one. But yeah, that was like the biggest thing that I can think of that stood out. So yeah, that one especially, just I can't justify bumping the score up into the 90s.
Fair. Totally fair. All right. Moving on over to music.
So I'm going to be honest. I thought that after I watched this movie, like, oh yeah, I'm going to totally download the whole soundtrack. Cause like, I think I liked it enough to do that. No, literally I only downloaded the I Always Wanted a Brother song. And that is literally the only song that I've listened to a couple of times from this soundtrack.
I hated that song. Fiery Passion.
I love that
this
song.
Soundtrack is the worst.
Damn.
I'm trying, dude, straight up, I'm trying to be as unbiased as I can.
Yeah.
It's ass.
Oh shit.
Can
I
you
never thought listen? I never thought I'd hear you say that about a Lin-Manuel Miranda written soundtrack.
That listen, that's my problem with it. It sounds like Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote it.
And you don't love that?
No, every single song had the same tone. Every song had the same tone to it. And I'm like, I'm just sure waiting enough. For the freaking like mini not rap moment. And every single song had one of those moments. And I'm like, God, I hate that shit, dude. Like this is my issue with his with In the Heights.
Yeah.
Like every song sounded the same except for like two.
Yeah.
And like there's some where like, yes, the culture definitely calls for that. Like how the songs in Encanto all kind of sound the same or kind of have like similar vibes about them. They fit because of that, like that culture, but it's just this little rappy thing that he likes to do, or this little rappy, not rappy thing that he likes to do. It feels like he writes these songs for himself.
So would you feel the same way about the Moana soundtrack?
Yes, exactly the same about Moana.
Okay.
Moana 2.
He didn't write Moana 2. He only wrote Moana.
He did all the songs in Moana?
Mm-hmm. There's a reason why Shiny is in that soundtrack.
Shiny is very much up his alley.
Yeah, I hate that song. That is literally the only song that I hate on the Moana soundtrack. I straight up despise that song.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was because it was, you know, decided already as he was like closing the deal to write the songs for this movie. But yeah, that's the reason why the songs for Moana 2 weren't written by Lin-Manuel Miranda, is because he was already writing the songs for Mufasa.
Dumb. Listen, I'm not going to argue and say that they are like just god awful songs. Like I personally do not care for them in any way, shape, or form. Like the worst bit, dude, every time it looked like a song was about to start, I'm just like, God,
you're just like, kill me. I don't think any of them are like horrible. And like when I heard them in the movie, I'm like, okay, that's okay. That's decent. But like you said, I didn't end up downloading any of the other songs besides I Always Wanted a Brother. That is literally the only song that I downloaded on Spotify from this movie.
That is my least favorite song.
That is freaking hilarious. That is just hilarious that we're just so completely opposite with that song.
Yeah. I mean, still, regardless, I think there is a decent amount of effort that was put into these songs.
Yeah.
They fit the tone as much as I despised it. I feel like I can comfortably give this soundtrack a 7.
Dude, that's what I was thinking.
Were you really?
I thought you'd be at like a 5 or a 6.
Personally, I'd be at a 5.
Okay.
Personally, I'd be at a 5. But I feel like the songs were decent enough. And obviously, there's something like there's earworm that comes with that damn brother song.
Yeah.
Like, because even Iris was singing it afterwards. I'm just like, stop it. But she loved that song.
Oh, that's fantastic. I feel I might have been able to be at an 8 if the other songs were memorable enough that I would have downloaded the whole soundtrack after. But the fact that I Always Wanted a Brother is the only song that I downloaded, I think I can only justify a 7.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Next, we got character design, which this is a high point for me.
Yes. No, I absolutely agree. I feel, especially in Taka's case, you know, I feel Mufasa, the way that he's designed in the original animated movie, it was quite easy to transition him into his live action look. Like throughout this movie and the live action Lion King, he looked great. I feel Scar's was a little different. It was a little harder for the colors that he was in the original Lion King. And yeah. So
especially with how realistic they were shooting for.
Yeah. And so I feel like the color dynamic that they went with, for how he goes from how he looks in this one to how he looks in the Lion King, I feel that alone actually tells a story. And I personally love that. And so, yeah, I agree with you. The designs for these characters are definitely a high point for this movie.
Yeah. I wouldn't quite put this at a 10, though. I'd even be hesitant with a 9. Like, just because silhouette-wise.
Fair, yeah.
Like, doesn't have a strong enough silhouette on its own for me personally to be like, oh yeah, this is iconic. But I think that they made enough improvements off of the first to justify like keeping it at the same level. Or because I don't even know what I was at with the first Lion King.
Yeah, dude. Like, I don't know either.
Yeah, let me see.
But not definitely Groot.
Yeah, the Lion King costumes, we were at a 9. Or so character design, we were at a 9. Which seems a bit high.
A little bit.
But I think I think an 8's good.
No, I agree. Definitely.
Yeah, it's just like, I think they made enough improvements. Like, it was good. Like, yeah. Good improvements. All right, last up, we got personal score.
Oh, I'm so interested to see yours. But do you want to go first or do you want me to?
I can go first.
Okay.
Straight up, I'm never watching this movie again. Like, I do not give a flying shit, dude. It was... I did not care for it whatsoever.
Oh, man.
It did... Like, the first half had me. I was like, okay, like, they're doing some decent stuff. And then it's just... got to that halfway point and I'm like, or after Mufasa and Taka like ran to escape and find the pride lands or whatever, like it just took a dive and I'm just like, God, this is just basic bitch story. Like, and it irritated me. And the, like them turning it into like a straight up musical also irritated me a little bit, but it wasn't necessarily that it was a musical. It's that I didn't care for the music and I thought it was ass. Like, legit, like anytime my daughter wants to watch the Lion movie, I'm going to turn on the actual Lion King. I'm not turning on this bullshit again. And I am so sick of these remakes, dude. Like, did you see that picture I sent you where it was like after the complete and utter bomb that was Snow White, like that they're Disney,
yeah,
like, putting those on the back burner for now.
Yeah.
And that freaking comment, yeah, that was just like, I think we all owe Rachel Zegler an apology.
I'm pretty sure I reacted to that. I think so. I thought I laughed. Reacted.
Oh, you might have. Yeah. I haven't checked my messages
in a hot
minute, but yeah.
But the freaking, but what was, I feel even better after that came out, freaking, a video leaked of JoJo Siwa trying out for live action.
I watched that too. Yeah? Oh my God.
Oh my goodness.
That made me want to peel my skin off.
Oh man.
I'm like, you cannot be serious.
Another comment that I just thought was hilarious was they're just like, well, how could you be saying that when, they're still coming out with Lilo and Stitch. Why aren't they pausing now with that? Why aren't they why aren't they canceling that? And
because it's the just movie's like, done.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, everything's done. It's already being marketed. Like, do you really think that they're going to be like, oh, nope, psych, we're not releasing Lilo and Stitch anymore.
Yeah. Like, come on. Oh my hell. Anyway, I'm sitting at a 67 with my personal score.
You know what? That's fair. That
is honestly as high as I could possibly go with this. I could be talked lower, but I'm trying to be somewhat nice.
Oh man. Yeah, that's, you know what? That's fair. I think personal, I'll be at a 73. Like I definitely liked it a little more than Caleb.
a little bit more.
But I definitely agree with all of his complaints. It's such an unnecessary prequel. It's also not a really good prequel. Like the way that the way that we come to this conclusion of why these characters are the way that they are, like we've said throughout this episode, me and him could have written a way better storyline for Mufasa and Taka and how they had their falling out. Just as far as prequels go, this is personally, I don't think it's the worst, but it's definitely not one of the best. 73.
Fair. All right. Well, with that, going through these categories real quick, starting off with story, we ended up averaging out to a 71. Writing is not our lowest, but it took a little bit of a dive, sitting at a 69. Acting got a bit of a bump, sitting at an 81. The character development is our lowest category, sitting at a 66.5. The effects had a decent bump, sitting at an 89, making it the highest category. Music is sitting at a 7 out of 10. The costumes are sitting at an 8, or the character design is sitting at an 8 out of 10. And then our personal score ended up averaging out to a 70. So with that, the final All Bros letter grade for Mufasa, the Lion King, has come out to a C+.
All right, I'll take it.
I'll take it too.
I like it.
It is going to be real interesting where this one's sitting. Oh, it barely cracked C+.
Oh, damn.
So our cutoff is for C+ is 60 or 76%. This is sitting at 76.43%.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
So So this puts it. Let's go above first. So it's above Transformers: Rise of the Beasts.
Okay.
Fair.
Like, yeah. I can agree with that.
Yeah, then getting into the C category, it's sitting above My Spy.
Yeah, okay.
It's above the Garfield movie.
Yeah, definitely.
It's above Orion in the Dark.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
It's above the Addams Family.
Yeah.
And it is above The Rise of Skywalker. You're struggling with that one hard.
Very. People know my feelings about The Rise of Skywalker, so...
All right, going the opposite direction. It is sitting below Paws of Fury, The Legend of Hank.
I don't know how to feel about that one.
I would rewatch Paws of Fury before I rewatch Mufasa.
I think I would watch Mufasa before I watch that other movie. Yeah.
It is below Cocaine Bear.
Yeah, okay.
It is below The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard.
All right.
It is below Disenchanted.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
And it's below The Strangers Pray at Night.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. Most part, I can agree with both lists.
Yeah. I want to see where it ranks compared to The Lion King. Oh, shit. So The Lion King, we gave a B.
Damn.
Yeah. 85.1%.
Wow.
And then this one's sitting at 76.43. So it's like significantly below.
Dude, what the hell is wrong with us?
Well, I mean, you gotta think too. We did give it a higher like music score. I think we gave it a 10 for music because Or I think we did. No, we did not. We gave it a 6.
Really?
It wasn't a musical.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we gave the effects 100. Story and writing were average, were 85, just because it was just retelling. Character development was really low. Music was 6. Character design was 9, and our personal score was 85.
Okay,
which is a little high, but I mean, I don't totally disagree with that.
Yeah, fair enough. All right.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah. All right. Well, unless you got anything else you want to say about your favorite prequel.
Oh man, this doesn't even crack like top 30 favorite prequels.
Well, if you enjoyed this episode and want to listen to more, you can follow and subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. We are literally everywhere: Spotify, Google Play, iHeartRadio, all of that jazz. If you want to check out all of our social media, just search up at the All Bros and you'll find us on Facebook, X, TikTok, Twitter, all those. If you want to email us, you can do so, theallbroschannel@gmail.com. If you want to check out our website, tinyurl.com/theallbros. Or if you want to check out our merch store, tpublic.com/user/theallbros. Is it just the All Bros or the All Bros channel?
I think it's just the All Bros.
Okay, so no channel, just the All Bros.
Yeah.
But next week is a little bit up in the air. We think that we have a set plan. So it will either be Thunderbolts or it will be Nosferatu.
Yeah, it's like I'd say at least an 85% chance it's going to be Thunderbolts.
There we go.
Like, unless something just goes horribly wrong, and then we'll do Nosferatu.
Yeah. So you can look forward to that next week. But until then, this has been the All Bros Podcast. I am Jonathan.
And I'm Caleb.
And we will catch you guys next week. See ya.
Deuces.